Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. The mayor of Rapid City sparked a backlash over comments he made about Native Americans and panhandling. He apologized for what he called a sloppy choice of wording. But the controversy brought some long-standing conflicts between Natives and non-Natives in border towns back to the surface. In the next hour, we'll take a look at this issue, as well as hear what some cities are doing to help heal pervasive problems of race, culture, and misunderstandings, right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Army Corps of Engineers' decision to allow construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline to move forward is dividing lawmakers on Capitol Hill. Matt Laszlo has the story from Washington.
Some critics say President Donald Trump and his new administration seem to confront controversial decisions without worrying about who they anger. They've done it again by quickly approving the controversial Dakota Access Pipeline, according to Democrats. Montana Senator John Tester used to be the top Democrat on the Indian Affairs Committee. He says he wishes the administration took a more thoughtful approach and listened to the tribe's concerns.
Well, I mean, I would tell you, I understand it goes through underneath a lake a mile wide. It seems to me they could have sited it in a place that does not provide as much potential for catastrophic spill. I mean, that river, I'm sure they could have found a spot narrower to go across than across the bottom of a lake.
Republicans see it differently. Wyoming Senator John Barrasso used to be the chairman of the Indian Affairs Committee. He says tribes' concerns are unfounded.
You know, the process of approving the pipeline has gone through lots of studies, lots of approval. It actually was approved at one point by the Obama administration, and then there was a reversal on that. You know, I think that all the due diligence has been done. I support the pipeline.
Barrasso says he also hopes the new administration allows even more pipelines to crisscross the West.
I support the pipelines. I think it's very important for us in North America to be focused on North American energy, energy security, the jobs that are related to that. And I think it's an important thing that we do. I support that pipeline. I supported Keystone XL pipeline.
But Senator Tester and other Democrats say they expect another outcry from the Sioux and other tribes out west if the administration doesn't consult them on the Dakota pipeline and future projects on or near their lands.
I think that everybody wants to have their voices heard, and I think that this is no exception.
For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
This week, a bipartisan group of more than a dozen U.S. senators signed a resolution, which passed the Senate, acknowledging the work of tribal colleges and universities. Rhonda Lavaldo spoke with some people at the Tribal College in Lawrence, Kansas, and has this report.
With a resolution recognizing the important work of 37 tribal colleges across the United States, Haskell Indian Nations University student Cassandra Yepa spoke about why they matter.
I think just because there's not a lot of tribal colleges, and because of that, you know, like, how are they supposed to know that we're here or that we're trying to make a difference as well? Or a lot of Natives want to go to college, and sometimes this is our only option for colleges.
Haskell President Vanita Chenault appreciated the awareness brought to tribal colleges during the American Indian Higher Education Consortium Day on the Hill in Washington, D.C.
It is important for them to understand that the investment that is made in this university is a wise investment. We have a tremendous amount of support from our state delegation. You know, I think that they will go to bat for us in the appropriations process. Right now, I think it's also evident that we're very much in a stage of transition. They're still waiting on pieces of that transition to come together to determine funding impacts.
Tribal colleges serve more than 160,000 American Indian and Alaska Natives each year. This is Rhonda Lavaldo for National Native News.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. Borders are a hot topic of discussion lately, especially when it comes to the wall between the U.S. and Mexico. Native nations also have their concerns over borders, like accounts of discrimination, racism, and even violence from non-Native residents in towns bordering reservations. Rapid City, South Dakota is one such town. Even after years of working to address damaging rhetoric, address this issue, damaging rhetoric came from Rapid City's mayor, and it veered into controversy when he described panhandling as a Native American issue. He later apologized for what he called a sloppy choice of wording. So what do incidents like this reveal about attitudes towards Native people in border towns? I ask this because it's what we are focusing in on today, border town issues, and we want you to be a part of it with your calls to 1-800-99-NATIVE. And whether it's Rapid City, Gallup, New Mexico, or Bemidji, Minnesota, towns near Native populations that are high often struggle to keep a lid on racial conflicts. But whose responsibility is it to improve strained relationships between Natives and non-Natives in border towns? Give us a call and share. The number is 1-800-996-2848. And now joining us from Rapid City, South Dakota, is Whitney Rencounter, and he is a graphic artist and the director of the Ate Yapi Youth Program, and he is a member of the Crow Creek Sioux Tribe. It's our pleasure to welcome him back to the hour. Whitney, thank you for being with us.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on today.
And it's our pleasure to have you back. And a lot of times when we get to this point where we're talking about border town issues, it's always interesting because a lot of times it seems like we're talking about the same thing, just a different day. Whitney, we started with giving folks a little bit on the details of the mayor's comments and kind of some of the controversy that it brought up. But are there any more details you'd like to share so people understand just exactly what happened and how we got to the point where he apologized?
Yeah, absolutely. I think part of the issue that rose is here in Rapid City, we're working in our city to make downtown Rapid City an attractive area. And, I'm part of the Convention and Visitors Bureau Board of Directors as well, so I have some input and participation in that. But I'm also Native American and working with our youth in town. You know, those two things kind of help me to look at different views of Rapid City. And currently it is. It's really turning into a beautiful, attractive area downtown. And I know during one of the city council meetings, there were some issues brought up about panhandling. And around the same time, there was a death, in the area of a store clerk. And, these things kind of coincided with other things happening in the city. And, so some of the store or business folks came into the city council meeting and were really upset about it. And I think the mayor released a statement, a two-part statement, through Rapid City Journal, which Rapid City Journal has a bad record of really explaining the issues we have in terms of Native American in our city. So combine those two things, it just really was turned to blame Native Americans, you know, when in reality we have about 8,000 to 10,000 Natives that live in our city, and maybe 50 at the most at some time they're panhandling or such, and a lot of them are homeless. And so, you know, the mayor essentially said directly that this was a Native American problem. And those of us in the city that have been working to improve our relationship and to get at the table and speak, you know, really took offense to that. So come to find out that the mayor, after meeting with the mayor, we found out he just, you chose a sloppy choice of words because he reacted out of misinformation that was given to him from the business owners, who later retract and said it wasn't as bad as it was, you know, originally. So that's just a prime example of when you don't have your full facts and information and you speak out of emotion, you know, a lot of times there's not a lot of good comes from that. So, you know, we just got to the bottom line of that to say we would like to stay on track with communication and build on our relationship in our city. And a lot of times you do have to stay on the facts. So that was just kind of a little background of what took place.
And Whitney, when you first heard some of this or, you know, started hearing the words of the mayor, what first came to your mind when you thought about this and you heard a mayor was saying this and how it would reach the population there in the city? What were your thoughts, Whitney?
Well, my thoughts on that were, you know, obviously, I think in our country, going back to the you know, slave owner days, and then also the dealings with our ancestors in our country here, you know, how a lot of that was done, and I would say the excuse that was used is when the labeling was done, like in our 13th Amendment, there's a part in there where, you know, everyone is free except with the exception of criminals who can be, you know, continue to be used as slaves and such. And same thing with the Native peoples. Our ancestors were deemed, because the public does not understand the spirituality and the prayer and our connection to Grandmother Earth, there's a lot of misconceptions. And that's not something in America that is even, you know, taught. I mean, in terms of our, you know, Hollywood says one thing about who we are as Native, and then in our school books, we're absent. In any public school book, you don't see much about Native American people. So I think the public, in general, the public wants to do the right thing when it comes to Native relations, but because it's kind of our country has done a good job of just kind of sweeping it under the rug, putting us on reservations and saying, you know, let's figure this out, it's created much a problem that's a big part of our country, and I don't think we have the tools to really reach across the table to get to know each other. And that's something we've done in Rapid City. And so when the mayor released that statement, we wanted to make sure that it was clear that what was really being said, and to help him, you know, to know that his responsibility as the leader in our city is to really think his thoughts, you know, think it through before he releases a statement. And then we wanted to continue to build upon the relationship building we've had in our city. So, you know, and when the general public, who maybe may not be educated, when they hear something like that from our city leader, they may then also shift the blame. But if we communicate and have that discussion that it isn't a Native American problem, this is a problem in our city, and it's a small problem in terms of our population. So, and it's a problem all across country. You know, all across the country, we see panhandling, we see homelessness, this and that, but it's up to us to work together, not to create division.
And, you know, something that was also interesting in some of the reporting on this and the words from the mayor, he also called upon tribal leaders to step in, or where are the tribal leaders when it comes to this? And I thought that was interesting. Whitney, do you have any thoughts on that? You know, is this a suggestion tribal leaders should deal with Native people in cities, or, you know, that made me think. What do you think about that, Whitney? Of saying, you know, let's involve tribal leaders here when this is a city that isn't on tribal land. Whitney?
Yeah, and I think what he was doing, you know, we've been doing a collective impact study in our city with all the folks that work together, nonprofits, and the folks that really help in our community. I think what the mayor was originally calling upon is though the Native American leaders in our city particularly, and, you know, even on the reservations, you know, he was calling us out, so to speak. And my response to that was, we are here. You know, with the Ateapi program, we have many leaders that are mentoring the students You know, we have many leaders at the, you know, throughout our city that are working, you know, and doing a great job and really helping with the efforts. Now, my response to that, too, was in reality, there's not a lot of opportunity available to quality Native American individuals who are qualified to work in business, to work in, you know, organizations in our community in a leadership role. With that's part of the problem, is that there's not a lot of those opportunities available. And so for us to be called out in that way, I did take exception to that because we are here, you know, doing what we can in the, with the resources that we have. So instead of calling us out, you know, we felt like we should be done, we should deal with this in a way that we come together and communicate and, you know, go about it in a proactive way instead of just kind of pushing the blame off on somebody else. And so that's kind of, that was my take on that. So that's why we wanted to meet and have that discussion.
I'm glad to even hear that, you know, that these meetings are taking place. And we're going to talk more about that here. Folks, if you'd like to join us, we are talking about border town relations when it comes to Native Nations and the folks in the border towns. Anything you want to share, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. What issues do you think need to be discussed more when it comes to border town relations? What about border town violence against Native Americans? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And you can also send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Whitney, we have our first caller. We're going to say hi to Gordon in Le Coudray, Wisconsin, tuned in on WOJB. Gordon, thanks for giving us a ring. What would you like to add to the mix?
Good morning, and thank you for having me on. I was calling, reflecting back in the early 80s, you know, Le Coudray won their treaty rights. I won't get into that, take up time, but we won the treaty rights. Of course, we had a lot of opposition from the area, from people in the area. And we had racist remarks. It was pretty rampant. One of the things that helped us was continuing to educate the community in terms of what the tribe contributes to the economy. And WOJB was really a part of that, the radio resource that we had in the community. And it bridged a gap in a lot of ways for our community. So that was helpful. And in going fast forward, going 20, 30 years later, we see a better relationship, although there's always bits and pieces of differences. A few years back in 2013, when I was the chairman of the tribe, I gave the State of the Tribes address to the Wisconsin legislature and to show how we are working with our local community in terms of government relations. We had the sheriff, Kelsey, come down and join us at this address, and the county commissioner, board chairman, and the chief of police to demonstrate that we were working. But at that time, we met monthly with the law enforcement and our tribal police. And so that was very effective. But it's an ongoing thing to do, is to kind of build these relationships. Basically informing people what we are and what we contribute to the tribe. Going north to our borders in Canada, you know, we have a lot of Ojibwe people, Cree people up there in Ontario and Manitoba, and sometimes we have issues with the border crossing there. And as one chief, former chief up there told me, he said, we were here before the borders. Why do we have to go through that? But I think that there should be some consideration for the be able to have Native people travel back and forth, because again, yeah, we were here before the borders were there. But in respect to the relationship here, it's an ongoing thing, that an ongoing responsibility of the local community and the tribe to work together to bring some harmony or work out the differences that they might have.
Great. Great to hear from you, Gordon, there in Lac-Couturier, tuned in on WOJB. Our phone lines are open. Share your thoughts, 1-800-996-2848. Whitney, Gordon brings up some really great points. What about working on these relations when, you know, an incident hasn't happened? He talked about an ongoing process of having these discussions. Whitney, what do you think about that, of making sure, you know, some of these conversations are happening when nothing's happening?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think a lot of times we react out of incident, you know, I think sometimes when that happens, we're kind of, you know, it's not sustainable at times. I think sometimes we'll try to fix something, and then efforts will be done, and then really it isn't carried on. I think one of the things that we've been doing in our city, and I know LeMoyne's on today, and happy to hear that he's going to be visiting with us today. But one of the things that we've done in the city, we have a group here that's gotten together because we saw a lack of relationships in our city. So we have a group called the Mini Luzahan Okola Kichiapi Ambassadors, you know, Rapid City Circle of Friends. And we went on a classroom on wheels and through the Black Hills to learn about the history. We had the superintendent of schools. We had the chief of police. We had many business leaders, folks in the community that were leaders in the non-native side, and then those of us on the native side. And we went through the Black Hills for a week, and we learned about the history of what took place with the treaties and the gold discovery and how important each of the sacred sites are. And by doing that, we developed relationships, and so now we've continued this effort. We're still going a few years later. You know, we did a welcome to Rapid City for the Lakota Nation Invitational. For the first time, there were signs up that said welcome to our city in Lakota language, and whereas in the past that wasn't there. And so the relationship that we're building and the efforts that we're doing is we're continuing to take a proactive approach to build on these relationships. So part of that relationship would happen when the mayor made these comments, you know, that enabled us to get into a meeting right away and really talk about how important wording is and the things that we talk about and say. And I think sometimes when we just wait for an incident to happen, you know, we kind of miss the fact that when we respond out of emotion, a lot of times it's kind of like back and forth arguments. But if we allow our original traditions as Lakota, Dakota, and all the nations are to allow the Creator to come in and do the work. And I think when we pray and when we communicate in a good way with the intent to come to an understanding and to make our cities and our communities better for our children, good things happen. You know, we're able to be honest and direct without you know, the emotion of anger and not wanting to get to an agreement. It's more of, you know, like a power struggle, so to speak. So I think that's one thing that happens. If you wait until an incident happens, it most times it becomes a power struggle. So there's not a lot of growth, especially in our border towns. And so with the work that we're doing in our city here in Rapid City, we're seeing a sustainability. I know the community conversations are doing a great job, and many of the organizations in our city are at the table when we have discussions. So we're excited about that.
And I think it's really important, you know, just thinking about this downtime. And a lot of times in the work that we do in journalism and when we have conversations with non-Native journalists and they want to know how do we get, you know, a better relationship with tribes. And it comes to these same elements of you can't just pop in when you want to get in there or something goes down. You have to be there. You have to report. You have to have a connection with the community. Folks, what do you think about that? 1-800-996-2848 is the key to healing border town relations. More communication, especially when things aren't happening. Are you a part of a movement or an effort to do some of this? Give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. Whitney, you mentioned LeMoyne. Let's go ahead and bring him in. He is in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Lamon LaPointe. He is a facilitator with the Barbara Schneider Foundation and a coordinator for the program Indigenizing Crisis Intervention Teams in Indian Country. He is Sichangu Lakota. Welcome back to the Hour, LeMoyne.
Hello, Tara. Good to hear you again.
Yeah, it's great to have you there. And Lemoyne, Whitney gave us a great glimpse into some of the collaborating. Is there anything you'd like to share on just based on what you heard so far?
I really appreciate what the Lakota Nation invitation would do this year because, you know, there's thousands of natives come into Rapid City that in December to the Lakota Nation's invitational. And it's a great opportunity to cross borders. And because right now, you know, we see them being blurred with goodness. Before, it was just cut and dried that it was racism that was causing these borders. But it does require what Whitney has said is communication and a different kind of communication. We can't communicate the way that we used to, because the way that we used to is based on old archaic assumptions from the frontier days that no longer work. In fact, some of our own residents, native and non-native, still retain some of those old assumptions. So we have to change the conversation and the content of it.
And I think it's interesting that you bring up a lot of this, you know, stemming from frontier days. And if you take a look at different border towns where you hear some of these issues going on with conflicts with Native Americans and non-natives, a lot of times those towns were built because people were coming to the area either to extract resources, which were at one time on tribal land. So the roots of border towns and Native nations, you know, they go way back. What's one key to breaking some of this down, Lemoyne, to make sure we think of Native people in a contemporary context and the lives they're doing and, you know, some of this good stuff that we're hearing? I mean, these students coming and playing and, you know, being, you know, great athletes. Tell me more on that, Lemoyne.
Well, I think one of the things to really take a look at in terms of Native America contribution, not only to the world, but actually our relationship with the universe, is to really educate the non-Native community about how forward-thinking or futuristic our thoughts were in terms of where we're at now. I mean, take a look at the Black Hills. A living laboratory, a living laboratory for people to study the universe, the stars. You know, that's a very strong geographical location that's very special to our culture because it contains seven sites that are corresponding to seven star constellations. And in turn, those seven constellations correspond to seven of our primary ceremonies. Now, that's futuristic. How did we as Lakota people identify seven star constellations that really precede a lot of the science that exists today? It could only happen when we're thinking it with a scientific mind. How did we know all of this? See, this is a worldview that we should start utilizing and trusting that can create bridges of understanding.
And, you know, it definitely does. And if you never have that conversation or start seeing Native people beyond what you see in headlines or the panhandlers in the city, you don't get to this point. I think it's pretty interesting. Lemoyne, thank you for that. We got to pause for a moment, but we will be back. Phone lines are open. Give us a ring. Researchers in Oregon found a need for comprehensive, culturally relevant sex education for teens. Since then, they've developed a program to reach Native teens with factual information about their bodies and healthy choices. Want to hear more? Join us as we talk about this and the importance of teaching safe sex to teens on the next Native America Calling.
Support by the Fred Jones Jr. Museum of Art at the University of Oklahoma presenting Photosynthesis, new photographs by Navajo Will Wilson plus works by early 20th century photographer Edward Curtis. Whereas Curtis posed his subjects, Wilson invited his subjects, some whose relatives were included in Curtis's 1930 Indians of Oklahoma, to choose how they posed. Photosynthesis through April 2nd, info at fjjma.ou.edu. Program support by the Peace Corps. The Peace Corps provides you with a network and support to make improving the lives of others possible. Volunteer in one of more than 60 countries around the world and build relationships, share your unique heritage, and work side by side with the community to solve challenges in education, health, agriculture, business, or the environment. Use your skills and talents to change lives, including your own. Info at peacecorps.gov. That's peacecorps.gov.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we're glad you are joining us today. However you're listening, maybe on one of our great tribal stations, community radio near where you call home. If you'd like a full listing, if you're going out of town or you just want to discover who else is listening to Native America Calling, you can go to our website, nativeamericacalling.com. We have a list of tribal stations as well as community stations that carry this broadcast, some live, some pre-recorded. And you can also find out where you can stream Native America Calling on our website if you want to go for a walk and keep listening. And there's even an app somewhere. And we do podcast on iTunes as well as SoundCloud. And every Friday, if you want to know what is coming up for the next week, you can find it on our website, sign up for our newsletter, and they'll be emailed directly to you. And today we are talking about border town issues. And if you've got something you'd like to share on the topic, give us a call. The number is 1-800-99-NATIVE. And you live near a border town. Are you in one right now? What is the situation there? Would you like to see improvement in your border town when it comes to race relations? Give us a call. The number is also 1-800-996-2848. And with us on the line, joining us from Minneapolis, Minnesota, we have Lemoyne Lapointe. He's a facilitator with the Barbara Snyder Foundation and coordinator for the Indigenizing Crisis Intervention Teams in Indian Country Program, and he is Sichangu Lakota. Also with us from Rapid City, South Dakota, is Whitney Rencounter, and he is a graphic artist and the director of Atiyapi Youth Program, and he's a member of the Crow Creek Sioux Tribe. Gentlemen, thank you for being with us, and welcome back. Lemoyne, I just wanted to give you a moment. When we think of border towns, we heard a little bit about issues in Rapid City, but when you think of border towns, what are some of the key elements that we see going on that create conflict that definitely need to be addressed? Lemoyne?
I think one is education. You know, you have these border towns, for example, near Rosebud Reservation, where there's an example there where at least, you know, the graduation rates are very, very low for Native American high school students. I remember about 10 years ago, there was a border town right there near the west or the east side of Rosebud Reservation where 1 in 5 of the Native middle school students were sent not only to the principal's office, but the police were also called on them. These were middle school students, you know, and then, you know, it was very difficult to see when you see a non-Native graduation rate of 82%, whereas in that particular school, there was only 11% graduation, and that was consistent from year to year. And the, one of those students in that school was actually my son. And he was in an altercation with non-Native students and was called, his mother was called, and she asked where he was at because she assumed he was at school. They said, well, he's in Chamberlain. And that's about 40 miles away. So they transported him from Winter to a juvenile detention facility without her knowledge in another border town. And eventually it became a court case called Antoine versus Wiener School District. That occurred back in 2006. So, you know, these kinds of issues happened. I remember when I was a student at Syntec-Leshka University, there was a study done where it showed that individuals who lived in isolated tribal communities on a reservation went often to the hospital with ailments like common colds, particularly common colds, you know, minor ailments like that. But those who lived in border towns, like in Winter, South Dakota, for example, were reporting to the hospital at a higher rate for heart and liver, you know, ailments and that type of major ailments. So the border, it just suggested that the border towns were very, very hard and harsh on Native peoples. And, you know, you could see that as well through their educational failures.
Yeah, you know, I think it's also interesting to, you know, when we talk about this and in our health and how it affects, you know, there's been some really great work on people connecting racism to health conditions and what it does to the body. And I think we've even dived, you know, jumped into that conversation here on our airwaves in the past of what it does to our body and you know, even our mental, you know, state. There's a lot there. And thanks for making those connections, Lemoyne. Whitney, anything else you'd like to say about issues that people face in border towns that really need a good discussion?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Yeah, I think one of the things is America, you know, fails to realize that the Indian problem, so to speak, in our history was solved with assimilation and then relocation and then with the, you know, Native, our ancestors had to go to the reservations or they would be considered hostile and shot, you know. And so that was the truth of what happened historically. Reservations are not part of our traditional way of life. You know, we took care of Grandmother Earth. We lived and we took care of each other in our communities. There wasn't any orphans. We had a beautiful way of life that we lived historically. And then when the reservations were established and the introduction of alcohol and the other addictions that accompanied that, it really creates a issue amongst our people that, and I don't think we look to non-natives to solve that for us, but at the same time, I think if non-natives will help us in that efforts of understanding and educating themselves about our history and their own history in that respect, on what we can do to work together to help alleviate a lot of the issues that face us. Because right now it's like two angry dogs looking at each other from when you take a look at a reservation and in a border town. It's almost because there's so much history in terms of you solve that. You know, I think a lot of the mayors historically tried to solve that by saying no Indians allowed in our city, or if there was three or more, they'd be considered hostile or a war party. You know, these are things that how it has been handled in the past, but we don't see success unless we are willing to reach across the aisle to say, okay, this is up to us together to solve this. And, you know, without that, the things that Lemoyne talked about, those are going to continue. And the issues that we face on the reservation, you know, that is going to take all of us really together to address these things and make our communities better with education and having that willingness. You know, I think in our majority, it's always about the get over it, you know, the idea that we need to fix these things. But in reality, this is going to take a process because of the last 500 years, our people have faced so much changes that this is really, in essence, for a young Native growing up on a reservation, they don't really understand why there's so much racism. Why do they get watched when they go to the stores off the reservation, especially in the border towns, or when they go to the school? Why are they, you know, called names, and why do they experience these types of things? You know, but in reality, it's up to us to really help, take care of ourselves, work on who we are. So it's going to take efforts on both sides of the aisle. But what we do is, in terms of what Lemoyne said, in terms of the education, we give ourselves a chance. And then those of us that understand that when you go to college and when you go into the world, there are many people that really embrace Native culture and they know what our traditions are, more so than the public schools in these border towns where they don't talk anything about Native original traditional history.
That's
and so
interesting.
I think that creates a problem.
All right, Whitney, thank you for that. And I think another time, too, where a lot of people see some of these issues come out is when they're trying to find housing or renting. Folks, anything you want to share, 1-800-99-NATIVE is the number, or 1-800-996-2848. Let's go ahead and take a call. We're going to hear now from James in Rapid City, South Dakota, listening on KILI. James, thank you for calling us from your connecting to Keeley Radio. Go ahead, James. You're on air.
Thank you for taking my call. I just want to put out a an experience that I had, because I know that Rapid City, the people, the natives and the whites, they've put a lot of time and effort into resolving the issues that we have where we can't get along. And I had an experience, and I would like to let everybody know this, because I think it's very important, because this experience that I have is an experience that would basically detour what everybody is trying to do nowadays. I was sitting in my car at a fast food establishment, and an elderly lady, and I assume it was her grandchild, who was about between the age of 5 and 7. When they walked by my car, I overheard her say, "You can't trust natives." And I don't know what happened in the conversation prior or after that, but it just seemed like a situation where she's passing down some knowledge that is going to negatively affect the efforts that everybody is putting forth as of today.
So it sometimes comes down to perceptions and attitudes. And Lemoyne, I know you want to talk about that, of how our attitudes towards people, our perceptions, shape and sometimes boil into some of these problems. James, thank you for your call. And if you'd like to join us, 1-800-996-2848. Lemoyne, go ahead.
It's the differences in perceptions that really contribute to conflict. And that's why communication, but particularly conversation, is so critical. We have in the Lakota language the word ichi woglakapi. And that means to talk with each other. And there's wisdom behind and within that one word, because what it's telling us, and it's really giving us a directive, is to sit down and speak with each other. But we've done that in the past, but we've done it incorrectly. We haven't done it the way that our predecessors, our ancestors, have cautioned us to do it. We should always begin our conversations with prayer, if possible, but we should always put our feet on what we call the red road or the high road. And that red road should really cause us to understand that there's an innate goodness in all of us, no matter who we are. That innate goodness also has another name in the Lakota language, and it's called Nagi, a spirit inside of us, a good spirit always inside of everyone. And that's the one thing that we should call upon right at the outset. That's why we often use prayer. But if we don't use prayer, we should always acknowledge that innate goodness in each of us. So we're putting our foot down and we're not making evaluations about each other right at the outset. We should understand that there's a unique way to really get off the ground on these conversations together. And that's what we're doing in places such as Rapid City. That's why it's working in Rapid City. Things are changing. We didn't get back to the town hall meeting. What we did was we enabled everyone to speak together to make equal contributions to the dialogue.
Right. Thank you for that, Lemoyne. And Whitney, when you think about this, you know, this issue, there's a lot of people involved. And often when we do shows about border town or even just racism, we usually get a call of somebody who says, Native Americans are also to blame. They're racist or they have attitudes towards non-natives. And so with that said, Whitney, any thoughts about work we need to do in our own Native communities, you know, so that some of these relationships are good, too, when the finger's being pointed at us as Natives?
Yeah, you know, I think the only way that we can make progress is if, you know, if, for example, if somebody wants to really heal their family and have a healthy family in their home, you know, a lot of times we have a misconception that if everybody around us would fix themselves, then everything would be okay. But I think through recovery and through prayer, you know, that our traditional way to do things is to focus on ourselves first. And what can we do? How can we challenge ourselves to be better and to be willing to accept change when it happens? And I think a lot of times we get together and have these discussions, but we don't have a goal in place to make things better. And so a lot of times it's we'll get together and we'll have a power struggle. You know, there'll be a lot of unresolved issues that will come out in the form of anger. And so a lot of times the other side of the aisle will turn off their you know, their conscience. You know, they don't even want to hear it anymore. It almost becomes that type of thing. But if you have these conversations with the open mind, and that's what Lemoyne talked about, when you have a prayer and when you open the dialogue and you say, our goal here in this conversation and the communication that we're having is to make things better for our children. And we don't make it about ourselves. We make it about the community. We make it about our youth. We make it about our families. Then we have a chance to really make a positive change. Whereas if we don't do those things, then it just kind of becomes a back and forth power struggle. And I think that's something that successfully is happening in Rapid City. Non-natives and natives are getting together, reaching across the aisle. We're having these conversations. We're learning how to trust each other. And a lot of times that's even the first step to really provide progress.
And why is that one? Sometimes the hardest thing is to getting people to trust each other. Whitney, start us off.
Well, I think the lack of trust obviously comes from the, you know, historically from our broken treaties and, you know, the government's denial in terms of the treatment of our ancestors. You know, that's where on the Native side of it. Then on a non-Native side of it, it's, you know, through the media and through the communications that the non-Native leaders communicate things is essentially, like I said, what I talked about earlier was labeling. A lot of labeling goes on, and that's exactly what, when James talked about the Rapid City incident, when the grandmother said to her grandchild, you know, you can't trust Natives, that essentially is a educational process that has done wrong. That's what not to do. You know, you can't judge a group of people, and I think that was a mistake that the mayor made when he said it's the Indian problem, you know, because that then labels and that creates that mistrust. So we have to get to a point where we can look at things openly and be willing to make progress. So when we do that, when we spend time with each other with the goal in mind of we want to make things better, that's how we develop trust. But if we don't do that, then there's really no trust to build.
And Lemoyne, I want to turn to you as well, because a lot of times people, they do want to have these conversations. They do want to see their communities engaging in this. But things can get really heated really fast. Lemoyne, what's your advice when these conversations get started and understanding that we're dealing with people's feelings, their beliefs, and, you know, challenging some of them sometimes if they're racist attitudes? You're telling somebody you're wrong for feeling a certain way. What do we do when things, you know, to keep things from getting heated, but have those good conversations? Go ahead, Lemoyne.
I think it's really dependent on how we start out our conversations. It's really imperative that we identify what our individual values that we're carrying at that time. When you walk in that door and you come into this room, what is one primary value that you brought here in this room with you? See, and to identify those values is something we never do together. Because sometimes, because we don't, we get right down to that old archaic assumption that there's a problem here to be solved. When in actuality, we should come in with a solution-oriented approach to say that I brought a gift in here and I'd like to share it. because we don't do that often. We get back into the same old modality of speaking with each other when there's other options. I mean, there's a world of options out there that we never ventured into, we never explored together. And that's what we should be doing, is exploring the world together and asking each other, how can we live differently and more healthfully together in different ways, ways that don't currently exist. I know in Rapid City, the community does not want to live the way they lived yesterday. They don't agree totally with the way they live now, but they're more inclined to look into the future and say, why should Rapid City be a destination place for the world? Why should the Lakota people be a world player on the world stage here in Rapid City? How can we give to our counterparts that we live with within the city limits? See, those are the kinds of questions we never ask each other. So an inquiry-based approach locally and globally is really critical to how we start out, but it has to utilize the identification of values as that bridge.
You know, Lemoyne, with that said, I think something to also throw in here is a lot of times people from the outside who are coming to these border towns, they're coming because they're visiting Native nations or they have an interest of educating themselves. And that's what's bringing them into some of these border towns. Whitney, does that ever get on the table when you're working with the city and, you know, putting that fact on the table?
You know, I think it does in many ways. You know, one of the mistakes that that we make, especially when we are when we have the opportunity to get together at the table and we have the discussions, a lot of times it's not very much time. And I think a mistake that is made when we do that is a lot of times, you know, if we're not if we're not working ourselves as the communicator, as the leader, on being, you know, on wo Lakota, you know, as we talk about carrying, as walking in balance like our ancestors did, you know, a lot of times we'll get into these meetings and we'll make it about us. Like, okay, so you didn't do this and that for me, you know, and a lot of times we're trying to process through resentments that we're holding because of this is the way things happened yesterday. And then by the time the meeting's over, it's basically there was no progress being made. But I think when we spend time outside of that preparing ourselves to learn how to forgive others, regardless of who they are and judging them, then we can make it about the community. And we have a willingness to be honest and direct and not necessarily, you know, using that time to, like I said, talk about the things that you did to us in the past and talk about all these things that were done, and then it just becomes an airing out session. But when we can get to these meetings and make it about change and making it about our children and learning how to heal from historical trauma and the things that we've experienced that were passed down from our ancestors, you know, when we can make it more about that, then I think good things happen.
All right. And let's also spend, I guess, kind of our last moment together just talking about maybe even bringing this into the schools and making sure our youngest community members are being involved. Any thoughts on that, Whitney?
Yes, and so with the Ate Api program, we've been in the school district here in Rapid City since 1994, and we noticed that there was a lack of positive fathers in our community. So the Ate Api word is a Lakota word for fatherhood, and so we placed mentors in the school district to help tutor and help students, especially the Native students, but then the non-Natives would see that, and they would learn more about our culture, and then it provides a place that understanding on both sides of it, so you're working together. So it's almost like we're teaching the young people how to get together and have conversations and learn about each other's culture, and then there's more understanding, you know. And so when we by having classrooms like many of our with the program that I'm in charge of, we're in 8 schools here in the city. We have 3 high schools and 5 middle schools, and so we're having that day-to-day tutoring and helping the students learn more about their culture and then spending time with them. And it's had a really positive impact. Like when we came here in 2010 at Central High School, the dropout rate was around 63-66%. And now this past year, it's down to 33%. And so a lot of that is because we're here partnering with the school district. We're a place where, I mean, there's about 2,000, sometimes 2,500 students at this one school. And so the high Native population, for us to be in the classroom, in the school setting, you know, a lot of times just saying hello and helping, challenging our students to stay in school, you know, those types of things aren't something that you see across the nation. You don't see folks, especially in the Native communities. And so by having Native mentors in our school district, we're really having that positive impact. And so we're making inroads.
And how do folks get a hold of you, Whitney?
You go to ruralamericainitiatives.org. You know, you could do a Google search, and then it has all of our programs on there. We have a Head Start program, and then we have the Ate Api programs. We also have a Lakota language programs, and we're all in the school district here from fourth grade all the way to high school. So that partnership that we're building in our city is really good. So we're grateful for that. And the impact that we have on the city and to see our students really, really improving, like I said, that dropout rate is really huge. But then just the fact that we're here to help the students understand that we have a beautiful culture, that we have a strong culture, and that for them to be proud and they have a place to kind of hang their hat, you know, we're excited about that.
And Whitney, is that invitation to those contacts also go to somebody maybe far from Rapid City who wants to start something like this or just has questions?
Yes, absolutely. Visit ruralamericainitiatives.org. And, you know, you can leave an email or there's some contact information there. Absolutely. You can contact us and we'll do what we can to help you.
All right. Thank you for that. It's been a pleasure to visit with our guests today, Lemoyne LaPointe and Whitney Rencounter. We're back again on Monday with a show about teaching sex education to Native youth. Thanks to the Native America Calling crew, our executive producer Art Hughes, senior producer Monica Brain, associate producer Andy Murphy, and our engineer Derek Toledo. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood, and we look forward to next week and having you join us. We have a great lineup and discussions that we know you'll want to be a part of. And how you do it is by calling in, sending us an email, comments at NativeAmericaCalling.com, or posting your thoughts online. And again, calling live into our program. We look forward to hearing your voice. That's going to do it for today, and we're back on Monday.
Huqa, aqnani huankuda iqchaqutput aqqujits qumakumtki huankutnik ayignqtuq. Qawiqlemik matumi iqalumi atuqina nazbagluku iqchaqum aqqujinqilqa amlinqulgit aqnat yugulgit yunrit klaqat. Insurance sanqliqqaqpunun imirinaqtudun iqchaqqut asiqutlqqanun. Qayaqornagan 1-800-318-2596 qallupaqluku healthcare.gov. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Qoyana.
Support by Amerind Media Group, offering compelling and entertaining films, TV series, and documentaries about the indigenous peoples from around the world. We are honored to share their cultures, traditions, and stories online with a no-charge trial at nativeflix.com.
Support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitors planning services to Native American conventions. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.